Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am so excited about today's show. I'm going to be interviewing a gentleman who is 101 years old, a World War II veteran, a man that I have found fascinating in all the times I've known him. His heart is so big, and he's such a great guy. His name is Tony Salentino. He's sitting there, and he's 101, and I was looking at him and looking at me. He looks better than I do, so he's doing something right. But please stay tuned for this. This is going to be kind of a show I wanted to do for several years now. I met Tony about 6 or 7 years ago. And we go to the same Christmas party. We sit in the living room in front of the fireplace and chat. So that's what we're going to do again right now. One young guy and one old guy. I'm the old guy. And we'll chat. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
How are you? Thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. I know 2 months from today, I'll be 102.
102. Okay.
November 27th. Today is the 27th.
I got to write that down because I'll have you take me out to lunch.
Oh, geez.
I'll drive.
I can drive too.
I know you can. But if you're buying, I'll drive. Tony, you were born in Italy.
Yes.
And you came up to this country. You had a great childhood in Italy. What made you come to this country?
Well, the only way I can explain that is that when I was 14 years old, you know, like you said, I had a happy childhood.
Yeah.
At that age, you know, you are happy. Little freedom and everything. But as you get older, so when I was 14 years old, my parents had decided that my father was still here in the United States and mother with the four children at that time, was in stayed in Italy. So they decided to send the two children, my old brother and I, to my father because my mother didn't quite want to come to the United States at that time. She didn't know too much about other places. So anyway, my older brother and I came to the United States in 1937. I was 14, my older brother was 16, and we landed in New York. My father was there, picked us up, and we drove us to Pittsfield. By train. That was in April 1937. The Depression was still very active at that time. We end up on Columbus Avenue. That's where my father had an apartment. And we took him from there. But shortly after, actually, couple months, my father got me a little job. I started working at the in a shoe repair shop.
Oh, cool.
At 14.
Cobbler.
Yeah, shining little shoes and learning the trade. Of course, and going back to school, both of us, But as time went by, things got a little better. But I went from I was there in the shoe repair shop approximately 4 years.
Wow.
Until that time there, and my older brother was having a little more a hard time because he was a little older, and we didn't know any better. We couldn't speak English. That was pretty hard. It was very difficult, we went on for there. When I was 17, I quit the shoe shop there, and I went to start working at the textile mill on Peck's Road.
Okay, remember it well.
Mill. And things were picking up. Then the war broke out, and things were getting busy. So I was there until working nights from 10 at night to 6 in the morning, running machines and weaving yarn during the day sometime, working two shifts at a time. I was there until 1943. And the war was getting bigger. And so a lot of young men started joining the service. When I got myself and I joined the army, and I wind up down Camp Pickett, Virginia, for training. And then from there, wind up this was shipped to England. I was there in England for I wind up in the medics, in the medical corps. Yeah, I was there about 13 months, maybe in England. From England, then the invasion to France,
Normandy, yeah.
Europe there came up, and we were getting ready to be shipped out. And I was one of those lucky ones. I was attached to headquarters. And headquarters was held back because there was another, my battalion went into the invasion on June 6, 1944. That's correct.
Right.
And we took it from there, and was a lucky we didn't go. Headquarters was held back because another battalion was coming in and from the States, and they had no headquarters. So we stayed back, and then a few months later from there, from England, went back to France, to Omaha Beach. The war was over there, but it was I got lucky over there. And from there, we got shipped to Marseille, port battalion,
Wow.
battalions. That's what it was. So I more or less followed my father's footsteps. My father came here at the age of 20 years old, 1912. And he worked as a laborer here in the United States until World War I broke out, and he joined the army.
Wow.
He wound up in the yeah, he wound up in the infantry, and started running. During the his service there and overseas there was running, I guess, and he wound up losing a rib and one lung.
Wow.
Yeah, he was in the hospital there for
Wow.
a while. He was had surgery. They removed a lung and a rib.
Tony, I want to just interrupt for a minute.
Yes.
Tell the audience about Tony wanted to go in the Marine Corps.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I love that story.
Yeah. Well, I went a little further than that. I wind up wanting to get into the Marine Corps for the reason that I didn't want to. I could hear the Marines being in the Pacific fighting the Japanese. So I didn't want to go to Europe. So I wanted to join the Marines. So when I went for the induction center in Springfield, they asked me why I wanted to get in the Marines. And I said, well, I just love the Marines and I like to. And I guess I looked kind of young, and I wasn't big enough either. So they said, you don't want to go. They took me out of it. They said, you should go in the Army. So they pushed me into another room there with the Army in induction place there. And I wind up going into the Army. That's how I won. They sent me to Camp Pickett, and they were saying, I was in the medics, in the medical. I became a medical technician as soon as I got overseas. And from there, you know, I wanted to, since I didn't go in the Marines, I wanted to go in the paratroopers.
Yeah?
Yeah, I tried to join that, and my sergeant took me out of there. He said, you don't want to go up there. So that's how I wound up in the medical corps.
You've had a fascinating life, and we'll get back to that. But you know, as you look back, you have to have a lot of wonderful memories of both a childhood in Italy, but coming here. Yeah, I mentioned somebody, you'll get a kick out of this. This is 4 or 5 years ago. Some kiddo that I knew, a young lady, her heel come off her shoe. So I said, well, why don't you bring it to a cobbler? And she looked at me like I had 17 heads. What's a cobbler? So, you know, today we just throw them away. No. You know, when you think back on all those terms.
A shoemaker.
Yeah, and shining shoes. I can remember that too, you know. So when you were in the Army, when you got out, what was the one thing that has stayed with you all these years?
Well, the main thing that stayed with me was the separation that we had in the family.
Yeah.
We had my father had half of like it, and my mother had the other half of the family. But you know, when we got here, it was entirely a different life for me and my brother.
Sure,
didn't speak English. We had no friends. We had no, like, it was kind of miserable. But most of the time, my older brother found a job in nighttime, and I was going to school, like during the time, school time. And my father worked at 12 hours a day.
Whoa.
For $12 a week, for, I'm telling you. And I was basically alone. I just go from school to walked home and was alone. You know, there was nobody.
Yeah.
I wasn't used to that, you know. There were times when I kind of blamed my parents for getting involved into that situation where we were alone and we could have been together.
Yeah.
But as I got older, though, And time went by, and I got a little older, and I started to think when especially after I got out of service, I started to think that that was the foundation of my life.
Oh, wow.
And I really believed that my parents had done the right thing. Because without them and without the sending me here and my brother being alone here, I won't have what I have now. I have a beautiful family. I have four wonderful children.
Yes.
There you go. My oldest one, John, he's an electrical engineer. My next door, excuse me, my daughter Kathy there, she's a school teacher. She retired. John retired also. Then I got Rick. He's a computer engineer there.
Wow.
And Maria, my last one, she just retired at 58. She works for the Defense Department at over General Dynamics. So, I have no complaints, and I have a very I'll be very grateful to my parents for what they've done. We do have disagreements
Sure.
and little arguments here and there, but it's there as a family all the time.
I'm sorry. My Irish mother used to say, nothing comes between or before family.
That's correct.
And
That's correct.
that's how we were raised, and that's how I'm raising my sons and grandson. You're in the army when you during the war, it was a different time for even in people in this country. I've heard, my grandparents talk about rationing and all that kind of stuff. But when you were in the service, what were you thinking? At that time in the war, you were a young guy. You're a medic. What were you thinking?
Well, I enjoyed being in the company in the location that I was, and I'm very thankful for that part. But my thinking about most of the time was my family, my mother, and where are they? Because during the war, I don't know if I'm sure you're aware of it. There was no communication. There was no mail, no communication in writing, or no, they were just cut off. So I was always wondering if they were dead or alive. So when the war started to be end. In 1945, I used to go to the Red Cross
Oh,
because
cool.
I was not too far away from the Red Cross in Marseille to check to see if they're still alive. And I don't know how many times I went. They had no knowledge, no connection, no communication, no way to find out. But at one point that I did, they said they did. And then they're alive and they're well. So quickly, I took my send started sending part 3/4 of my pay to my mother from there while I was there. So that was a big help. And so the war was over in that area. I think the war was still going on in the way up in the. Northern Italy and Germany. They were probably still going on. But I applied for a leave if it was possible for me to go to see my mother, my sisters.
Wow.
I had my two sisters, Mary Ann and Angelina, and my younger brother John. And I was approved, and I got on the plane. I went to a military plane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I went to Naples, from Naples. So got on the train, went down there, and boy, I'm telling you, it was heaven. It was heaven. I hadn't seen him before 9 years,
Yeah.
nine and a half years.
Yeah, and you said, when we chatted in the past, you said you were really worried about them
Yeah.
during the war that they would be okay. And that had to be so rewarding, so fulfilling, and
Oh,
so emotional.
yeah. When I got there, I was close by there. My somehow word got to my family, my mother, my sisters, and John, and my brother, that I was there. And I remember my sister Angelina running
Wow.
halfway. Yeah,
Wow.
it was a thrill. Yeah.
Folks, I want to just for those people just tuning in, because it is a morning show, people are in, people are out. This wonderful gentleman, everybody calls him Uncle Tony, so I call him Uncle Tony. But he's Tony Salentino. He's 101 years old, and in November he'll be 102. So he and I have developed a friendship over the past 6, 7 years at various get-togethers we get to. We usually sit in the living room in front of the fireplace and chat. And I have found him a fascinating individual in so many ways. His philosophy of life, his always smile, always upbeat. What he went through, had to leave his family as a child, come to this country, couldn't speak English. Let's start thinking about that ourselves, about some of these other folks that are coming. Went to work in a cobbler's office, shining shoes and learning the trade. Ended up going on to World War II as a medic. And we're only part way through this phenomenal man's his life, and there's a lot of shows I like to do. There's no question about it. This show I felt I had to do, and to as a tribute to him and his family, but also to let people know what life's really about and stop all the bickering between stuff. It drives me crazy, and for me, going crazy is I don't pack an overnight bag. Tony, when you came here, when did you start to learn English? And did you said you started going to school? How did that work out?
Well, that worked out fine. While I was working in the shoe shop, I had met a lot of people, including a lot of children outside.
Cool.
And so I going to school, it was very hard at the beginning, but there were a bunch of children, kids like myself, and they all liked me, and I liked them. There was no, I don't remember anyone who tried to make fun of me because I couldn't speak English. But it's the best way to learn, mingle in with the other
That's
children.
right. Yep.
And it was hard. It was hard, but I came out of a pretty good. Yeah, I made up pretty good.
Yeah.
So, but I, as I going back, and like I said before, it's a being alone of many, many months, many years,
Yeah.
sometimes, because my father was working, my older brother was working nighttime, and it was hard for me to be alone. Leaving going home and there's nobody home.
Yeah.
When I get out of the service, I'm going back and there. When I get out of the service, I came back here in the, with my father and my older brother. I made up papers and I got my mother and the rest of the family to come over here. And within a year, they, in 1947, we were all back together here in the United States.
Wow,
And I got my father, I had to go back to work in a textile mill because it was mandatory that they give you a job back.
That's right.
And since I got there, I got my father out of the restaurants and I brought him over there to work. And he was very happy, was making more money. And I also got my two sisters, Angelina and Marianne, to work in the thing. My younger brother, I brought him up to a school administration and I registered him to go to school. And he got into the high school at the same age as he
was. Oh, good.
And he made out very well. He learned it very quickly because he was involved with other children, teenagers, I suppose. So he was 16. And before my mother came here, under GI Bill, I went and bought a house on Pex Road. And my father loved the place, and we lived together. My two sisters, after they got married, one married one of the Penna, Joe Penna.
Joe Penna, sure.
My Angelina married Joe Mangiardi there, and Kathy's
Fabrizio.
That's my niece,
yeah.
And Michael. They're great. They're great. Marvelous.
But going back just to that piece, coming home, you had the GI Bill, and I write you, and we'll talk about that after the break. How you went to college, but you had the GI Bill, and you used it to buy a house for your family. Now, yeah. For the people that are watching and listening, that's the kind of guy Uncle Tony is. He's not a taker. You know, you've heard me say this before. There's a lot of people in this world that are takers, and there's a lot of people in this world that are givers. Uncle Tony's a giver, and his whole family that I know, they're givers. I mean, I go back with the Mangiardi family. Well, we won't go there, but young Nick Mangiardi and I went to school together. So,
did you? Yeah.
Well, we say young, but now we're the same age. We're going to take a quick break, about a 1 minute break, and we'll be back. We have some more to talk about.
Okay.
You know, people talk about human interest stories. And people talk about a lot of things. Well, this man right here, this Uncle Tony, he is a human interest story. He came from Italy. He went in the war. He came home. He became something of himself. He contributed his whole life to this country, to his family, his friends. In every so often, I think in this day and age, and I mean that, in this day and age when the vitriol would knock you over, we need to hear from people like Uncle Tony. And I hope you don't mind me calling you Uncle Tony, but he's a wonderful person. We're going to take a break. This says 89.7 WTBR FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM. The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com. And from Park Square Productions. Park Square Productions provides high-quality video and audio productions for businesses and nonprofit organizations throughout the Berkshires. Find more information about Park Square Productions and what they can do for you at ParkSquareProductions.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM. Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we're back. For those that are just tuning in, this is a show I've wanted to do for 2 or 3 years or more. This is a man I met many years ago, 6 or 7 years ago at a party, and I just enamored by him. And because he's the epitome of a good guy. His name is, a lot of people refer to him as Uncle Tony. You can call him Tony Salentino. He also is 101 years old, and in November will be 102. He's a World War II veteran medic and worked in the mills, couldn't speak English when he came to this country, and married, has children and grandchildren. And so without further ado, foie gras, soup du jour, Uncle Tony, how's it? Uncle Tony, now how long have you been married?
71 years. 71.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. I'm married this, this beautiful girl from Italy, I remember her when she was, when I came to this country, you know, she was 4 years old, and I came here to the United States, and they moved her from the Polia. That's the place where I came. I came from, I was born in Polia, in Calabria, Italy. Okay. And she was 4 years old, and they moved up to in the outside of Rome in Guidonia. It's right outside of Rome, and they grew up there. And I came here to the United States, so we didn't really see each other. But when my family, my mother, my sisters, and our young brother came here, my sister Angie knew her, and she kind of introduced me by mail, communicating. Then we started communicating. She was now a teenager, so at some point I decided, we communicated there for a few years.
Yeah.
Well, because when I got out of the service, I also wanted to go to art school, and I ended up going went to art school under G.I. Bill in Boston, New England School of Art.
Yes, sir. And you know, think back then, too, yeah. Tony, you're a young man. Without that G.I. Bill, you probably wouldn't have been able to go to college.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was a big help. Yeah, the house, the school. I could never go to school without the G.I. Bill. So yeah. I get out of school, the art school there. It was very difficult for me to find any kind of work here in Pittsfield because what I wanted to get in GE, General Electric, here as an artist. General Electric was getting all the kind of advertising and any publications from Schenectady, the headquarters. Yep. So it took me a while. In the meantime, I was doing some freelance work here, banks and a few other places. Okay. But in the meantime, finally, I decided to go back to Italy, and I went there, and I stayed there 8 months, and somehow I got married with my wife, Bettina. And when I tried to, I thought I can bring her back right away, right. But they told me at the American Consul that it would be approximately a year before she'd be able to come. So I came back because I had to get to work. And that is when I bought the house on the job, Bill, and the things got moving along. So when my wife came here, she was a seamstress, and she really, really worked. She started working in the coat factory.
Yeah.
I used to go down. She got pregnant with my first child there, and I remember going and pick up coats from the coat factory with my station wagon and bring them home, and she would do it, and I'll bring them back. And then she wound up working for Elise Ferrar down Lenox.
Sure.
And yeah, she was very, very good. She worked there over, I think it was 22 years until they closed. And even in afterwards, she was down, what's the name of the
factory? I know.
The nursing home down.
Yeah.
What is it? I forgot the name. Farm. Anyway, but both of us worked hard to bring up our four children. Like I said, they're just wonderful children. And we really did pretty well. I retired in 67 from General Electric. I was looking for a job.
Yeah.
After my wife was here, she could hardly speak English also. I was looking for a job, and I decided I didn't want to leave Pittsfield because I had my friends and my sister. They all came from Italy. So one day I went to Springfield. It was an opening, and I said, I'll take it. There was an opening job, I don't know, designing ties or whatever. I said, I'll take it. The guy tried to talk me out of it because he said, it doesn't pay that much. You're from Pittsfield, you got to move here and all that. But anyway, when I got home, my wife told me, says, you have a call from Al Sullivan in GE, because I had applied for a job.
Yeah.
And boy, I'm telling you, I didn't believe it, but I called back and I went there and so there's an open ordinance. He sent me over there. It was a really nice guy. He tried several times, L. Sullivan. He was really good. I went over there. I got the job. I was the first artist in the ordinance.
Wow.
And I put, I'm telling you, I did a lot of work, 37 years in there. And doing presentations, reports, training manuals. But most of all was the contract work.
Yeah.
Working it overtime, nighttime, and then I had a group. I became a supervisor, and I had my own art group.
Right.
I had about a dozen artists and typists. So I did pretty well.
Yeah, not bad for a kid from Italy. You've done okay. You know. Here's the thing: I want people to understand. Tony went to art school and got a degree in graphic arts.
Yes.
And that's how he got into where he was at the General Electric Ordnance.
Right.
And, as you look back and you think of all the things in life that you've done, some have been rewarding, some have been a little tedious, at work at GE, what was one of the things you mentioned? This man who kept calling you and was persistent. Was there anything else that stuck with you about working in GE? Because right now, I mean, that's a bygone era, as they say.
Well, one of the most important things that I was working on. It was a proposals for contract to the government and presentations. So you used to get these young engineers that they were very good, but you'd be working until the last minute. See, they had to prepare the work and then the material. I did the preparing for printing.
Right, right.
Yeah, I had to do all the artwork for printing. But to the writing and whatever was necessary to go into the proposals, then they would bring it to their manager, and the manager would make changes. And why they'd come back to me, say we have to make, I had the material all set, ready to go to the printer. So we got changes. Then you got to work in overtime and during the night. There were a couple of times that I worked during the day. I never forget, I had, I was working with this young engineer. He was doing the, preparing the material. I had to prepare the artwork and the typing. Like I said, I had typers. And I had to take, I worked all day, he and I. He said to stay together. And we sent the work to Connecticut, to a printer in Connecticut. And then we had to go there to proofread it and check the work. So we worked all night. We worked all day. We worked all night down there. And we come back and worked all day.
Again.
Again. And then I went home. And a friend of mine called me up. And I started talking on the phone. And believe it or not, I fell asleep on the phone. My wife woke me up. But that was the kind of type of work that there were many, many changes that were made the last minute. And like somebody, couple engineers had to go to Washington to for a presentation.
Yeah.
So I had to get it prepared, and I had people working that they were very good, very dependable, you know, and we got the jobs done.
Yeah, and that kind of work, I'm semi-familiar with it. It has to be right.
Yeah, absolutely.
It has to be correct, factual. And so it's the minuscule little things that you have to drive you nuts.
Yeah.
Do you miss work?
Yes, in a way I did. Yes, in a way I did, because I loved what I was doing.
Yeah.
And if you do like it, what you're doing, you're doing a good job.
Well, yeah. And what's the old,
also the people, but, you know, now that was, you know, I retired, I think it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Long time.
Long time, and there's a lot of people have come and gone since then.
Gone, too. Yeah.
My father-in-law went to Stockbridge School at University of Massachusetts to be a tree surgeon. Mm-hmm. He had 5 kids, and the Depression and all this. So he went to work in the GE, and he told me, whatever you do in life, make sure you like it.
Yep.
Because he said, I was an outdoors guy, wanted to be outdoors, and I had to work in a factory, and every time I walked through those gates, it was difficult. So you were lucky. You were doing something you enjoyed, you loved, you were trained to do. What a great opportunity that was.
Yes, yes.
And so you married Bettina. And you come back and you had how many kiddos again? I forget.
Four. Yeah.
Yeah.
John, Kathy, Rick, and Maria. They're just wonderful because they're kids here. My older son just left here too. He came from Virginia. And
oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to come back in Thanksgiving again. So we've been busy. Yeah.
We only got a few minutes left, and I just want to say you are a delightful person to know, to be around, your entire family. And what advice can you give people? Today, the world is kind of helter-skelter. It's crazy. People are nasty to each other. What advice at 101, going to be 102, what advice can you give to people today on the radio about family and friends?
Well, in my opinion is that you have to keep moving. You have to keep moving. You have to do a little exercise. You have to keep your body healthy. And you have to, you can't just sit back and relax all the time. You know,
yes, right.
You can't let your body fall apart. I don't know. You got to get involved with people and young people, old people. You know, you got to keep moving. Like I said, it's I still drive. I go shopping. I do the bills for some most of the time. And with my wife and I did a lot of traveling.
Good.
Yeah, a lot of traveling. Went all over Europe. In the Caribbean and Hawaii.
Oh, cool.
All over Canada. So, you know, you can't just relax especially as you get older, you know, you have to be active, do things.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. You gotta, that's the way to stay healthy and eat good food too, you know.
But not too much of the good food.
No, not too much of everything either.
Yeah, yeah. I can't thank you enough. You're an inspiration to me and so many other people, and I mean that sincerely. You know, in this world where friendships really do count, I consider you Uncle Tony, if I may call you that. And that's, I guess, from Kathy Fabricio. That's all I can. Oh, my Uncle Tony. So the next thing you know, I'm calling you Uncle Tony. So there were,
Who also calls me Uncle Tony, Monsignor Mike from St. Joe's Church.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's another good guy.
Kathy and Michael, they're really great. They're really great. And I have a lot of nieces and nephews around.
Yes, you do. The families of Penna, Mangiardis and your own, I mean, come on.
Right.
I mean, that could be you'd have to get the state forest to have a family get together.
No. No, we get together. My daughter, youngest daughter, she gets the place here in a pavilion in Daughter Lake.
Yes.
And 4th of July, we have all relatives and friends over there. And you can come too.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate that.
We have a good time. I got a couple nephews there that are state troopers.
Yeah.
I got one, Michael Fabricio, there is a doctor there. And, that's a way of life, you know. We stay together.
That's nothing comes between, above or between family.
Right.
Before or between.
Yeah. That was, like I said, you know, I felt that sometimes that I, up to a certain point, I followed my father's footsteps, you know, up to, like to going up to the service, you know. And, but after that, I did a little better than my father. But my father was, my parents were good parents. They did the best they could, you know. It's one of those things that we are all different, you know. There were people, young people, I knew another couple, they came here when they were young from Calabria, Italy. And it was a brother and a sister about our age. They came here maybe a couple of years before, but they mingled in. They had relatives, and they mingled in a little different with, like we did. We couldn't. We didn't have any.
Yeah.
Well, they had friends and relatives, so they learned, and they got a job in the GE right away. The father was working there, so things were easy. So everybody have a story, a lot different kind of life.
That's true.
Yeah.
Tony, I look forward to seeing you at Christmas at that get-together in the living room by the fireplace.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
God bless you, Kathy. God bless you and your entire family. I thank you so much for doing this. It means so much to me, and I hope it was rewarding for you.
Well, thank you. It was. It was a pleasure for me to talk to you like this.
Well, you're a good man, and it's an honor for me to be able to have you on the show and to call you Uncle Tony.
Thank you. Thank you,
Bill. All right, folks, a couple of real quick announcements, and then Then we're going to go on the third Wednesday of every month at the senior center. They have a memory cafe, and that is in the Berkshires. It's the only one in the Berkshires that I know of right now. And it's where caregivers from Berkshire County get together for people, and some people with some mild cognitive impairment, memory loss, get together to just kind of have coffee and just support each other. Also, on the workshops series. This is Berkshire Athenaeum announces Teen Electronic Music Workshop. The workshop series will occur four Wednesdays, October 2nd, 9th, 16th, and 23rd, from 3 to 4:30. Registration is required, and you can do that by calling the Berkshire Athenaeum Children's 413-499-9480, extension 5. Wham Theater, having a new play, announces the fall co-production of Galileo's Daughter. And that will be really a great thing. So, and again, more information on that, 413-274-8122. Or www.wamtheatre.com. Pittsfield announces the Halloween parade has returned. The Halloween parade will be held Friday, October the 25th, 7 p.m. On Tyler Street. There's all kinds of ghouls and goblins and all kinds of things. For every unit will need to review Halloween parade application and complete all applicable forms. You can get the application packet by going on www.cityofpittsfield.org/departments/community/parks/recreation/fall/halloween.php. And if not, you can just call, let me get the number here. Oh, they don't have it. Or you can just go on this website here. It's a little bit easier. parks@cityofpittsfield.org. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank Tony Salentino, as you probably have seen, he's a magnificent person. He really is a magnificent person, and I hope someday to be as good as he is. But I got a long way to go. God bless. Take care of each other. Today, try to do something for somebody else. Try to make somebody smile. Try to lift somebody's load. Talk to you soon. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as I enjoyed doing it. Take care.